What happens when a secular American journalist sits down with a conservative Islamic scholar to study the Quran? In a world quick to draw battle lines between East and West, Muslim and non-Muslim, religious and secular, Carla Power's friendship with Sheikh Mohammed Akram Nahdwi shouldn't make sense. Yet their year-long journey through Islam's holiest text reveals something far more interesting than conflict: the messy, beautiful complexity of faith in practice. Power, raised Jewish Quaker and shaped by feminist ideals, found herself spending weekly sessions in Oxford cafes with a man who seemed her opposite in every way. But the Sheikh defied easy labels. When asked if he was Salafi, liberal, or conservative, he simply replied, "I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm just Muslim." This refusal to fit neatly into boxes would become the theme of their entire relationship, and perhaps the most important lesson about understanding Islam in our polarized age. Sheikh Akram's independence had a way of unsettling people on all sides. He'd stand before conservative congregations and declare that prayer caps were merely South Asian custom, not Islamic requirement. He'd tell traditional audiences that women could cut their hair short based on examples from the prophet's wives. These weren't provocations for their own sake. They emerged from his meticulous research into Islamic history, which revealed a faith far more flexible than modern practice suggested. Sheikh Akram's independence had a way of unsettling people on all sides. He'd stand before conservative congregations and declare that prayer caps were merely South Asian custom, not Islamic requirement. He'd tell traditional audiences that women could cut their hair short based on examples from the prophet's wives. These weren't provocations for their own sake. They emerged from his meticulous research into Islamic history, which revealed a faith far more flexible than modern practice suggested. Power's fascination with Islamic cultures began through sensory experience. Mosque domes, wool carpets, women's chadors during her childhood in 1970s Iran and Afghanistan. Western assumptions that Islam was retreating before modernization shattered with Iran's 1979 revolution. She later discovered the treaty protecting Americans like her family had fueled Khomeini's 1964 sermon against imperialism. As a journalist, she fought headlines like Jihad in the City for stories about peaceful coexistence, challenging editors dismissing Palestinian perspectives. Even Taliban stereotypes collapsed when she met a press secretary rhapsodizing about Rome's gardens in perfect Italian. The Sheikh's life similarly transcended categorization. A village boy from India who became an Oxford scholar, embodying contemporary Muslim identity's complexity. "Islam is not an idea," he told her. "It is a history." Power accompanied the Sheikh to Jamtahan, his ancestral village in Uttar Pradesh, where he was building two madrasas with Oxford earnings. While Westerners post-9/11 viewed madrasas as jihad factories, his taught English alongside Quran and Islamic jurisprudence. When Power addressed the all-male audience, their questions cut to politics. Is American media controlled by Jewish people? And why does America act against Muslim interests? For these villagers, Islam's intersection with the West was shaped by geopolitics, not platitudes. She was then taken to the family's zenanchane, built for Purdah women, screened from the outside world except for a rectangle of sky above the courtyard. Akram observed strict gender separation in the village, yet in Oxford, Purdah relaxed. His daughter Sumaya laughed when asked if she could drive. "I could drive before my husband did." At Nadwat al-Ulama, where Akram studied, he learned Islamic sciences alongside Shakespeare, Freud, and Sartre. His Leicester work, Restoring Women's Mosque Access, drew on historical precedent. During the Prophet's era, women attended freely, a practice later restricted by cultural norms masquerading as religious law. When Prince Charles visited the Oxford Center for Islamic Studies, administrators fussed over protocol while Akram stood unmoved in his gray caracal cap. His dignity stemmed from Islam's flattening of worldly hierarchies. There was only one power he truly respected. That first autumn, he missed Nahdwa's spiritual continuity, where worship and study formed an unbroken devotional chain. Asked what he missed most, he simply replied, "True friendship." Powers' 24-year-old American self couldn't grasp his unwillingness to return despite homesickness. Years later, she understood what she dismissed as passivity was actually muscular submission. When Akram taught the Quranic story of Yusuf, Joseph, she saw beyond a man with great clothes and horrible brothers to find tools for enduring anywhere: humility, patience, and adaptability. He illustrated with a simple diagram, a line representing your space, circumstances, and a circle representing your cycle of faith. While your space isn't in your control, your cycle is. Yusuf never complained despite being thrown in a well, sold into slavery, or imprisoned. When you have taqwa, you don't need fatwas, the sheikh explained, a philosophy offering comfort to migrants worldwide. While reporting on the Taliban's 1998 ban on women's education, Power discovered Akram was uncovering thousands of women hadith scholars throughout history. Fatima bint Saad al-Khair studied across Asia before teaching in Damascus, Jerusalem, and Cairo. Women scholars were renowned for accuracy. None were accused of fabricating hadith, unlike some men who invented traditions to flatter rulers. Al-Karim Karima taught Sahih al-Bukhari, second only to the Quran, attracting students from everywhere. Women's scholarship declined after the 17th century with European colonialism. Aisha, the Prophet's third wife, exemplified this tradition, a top scholar, women's rights champion, military commander, and jurist whose 2,210 preserved hadiths reveal a courageous voice on matters from prayer to sex. Muhammad prioritized her happiness, even racing with her. At Imperial College, the Sheikh lamented modern Muslims neglecting this example. People, when they marry, they don't want to make their wives happy. Make them happy. His work provides historical precedent for Muslim women's education today, arguing that denying women education resembles pre-Islamic customs of burying girls alive, a live burial of potential. In a world demanding we choose sides, Power and Akram's friendship offered something rare, the courage to sit with uncomfortable questions. Their year together didn't resolve into neat answers about women's rights, religious authority, or tradition meeting modernity. Their first lesson studied Al-Fatiha, the Quran's opening chapter, 25 Arabic words recited 17 times daily by devout Muslims. When Akram mentioned some interpret its final lines about those who are objects of anger as referring to Jews and Christians, Power felt the friction between their worldviews sharpen. When they tackled controversial verses about male guardianship or marital discipline, the sheikh didn't dodge. Daraba means to beat, he acknowledged, not some sanitized euphemism. Yet he outlined strict conditions rooted in the Prophet's example, who never hit his wives and strongly reprimanded those who did. When Power pressed him about adapting guardianship systems to modern realities where women work and earn, Akram insisted the issue wasn't who was in charge, but whether people feared God and acted justly. She didn't always agree, but she learned something more valuable: how deeply held convictions can coexist with genuine respect. Their conversations moved fluidly from the sublime to the mundane, from death and the afterlife to makeup and menstruation, challenging Western categorization. After a year of lessons, Power asked what would happen to someone who believed in God but wasn't ready to submit to Islam. The Sheikh's answer was gentle but clear. Without faith, good deeds might bring worldly rewards but not salvation. Yet he admitted his own uncertainty. Everything depends on God. A week after their final lesson, Power's mother died. Shortly after the memorial service, she learned the Sheikh's own mother had died unexpectedly. He responded with the traditional phrase, "Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un." We belong to God, and to God we return. Through their year together, Power came to understand the Quran not as a book to be read from beginning to end, but as a place to which the faithful return repeatedly. The Sheikh's journey from India to England meant a layering of cultures. His Western life provided perspective to distinguish Islamic faith from ancestral traditions, while giving him resources to establish a girls' madrasa back home. These weren't the answers Power expected, but they were honest. And in our age of performative certainty, honesty matters more than we admit. Understanding doesn't require agreement. It requires the willingness to see the world through another's eyes.